Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode, part two of how we would fix the brands. And today we're going to be talking about not just the legacy brands, but also the new electric brands. And with me is a very special guest, Mr. Moto Man himself from Moto Man TV. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you once again for having me here.
Yeah. Last week's episode was a lot of fun. We went into, relatively deep depth about fixing different vehicle brands. So where can people find you if they want to find you?
Moto Man TV, all one word. Moto Man TV, all one word, on all the streaming platforms. So that's YouTube, Amazon, Google, Apple, all of them.
And if you guys, you know, are into, well, you,
oh, and Instagram. Don't forget Instagram and Twitter.
If you guys are into airplanes.
Yes,
Moto, sir. Moto Man is also Aero Man.
I am Aero. You know what? I got to start doing more airplane episodes. I did one in total. We flew a Nanchang. For those of you that know the airplane world, that is a warbird. And we flew it from Torrance Airport all the way to Oshkosh. Did this wonderful 20-minute episode and nobody watched it. We even had Vaughn Gittin Jr. in it. It was super fun.
That's the problem, right? Unless you have an audience for airplanes, it's hard to get people to want content that is outside of your wheelhouse.
Yeah, sadly, even the big guys in the aviation world, they're like the small guys in the car world.
All right, so let's fix some car companies, and let's start with the one that was recently purchased, let's call it what it is, by Peugeot. Used to be called FCA.
Whatever they're called, I can't pronounce it.
It used to be FCA, and before FCA it was Chrysler, right?
It was Chrysler. And I like to refer to it as the big Jeep giveaway, the grand Jeep giveaway, because every company that has acquired the Jeep brand has been not deserving of it, and they haven't been a good custodian of it, and the one company that would be the good custodian of it never got close.
Which is?
General Motors. Mm-hmm. Back, I had Bob Lutz on my Inside the Moto Man studio episode at the Peterson, and he spilled the beans. GM was actually going to acquire all of Chrysler. They were going to get rid of Chrysler, get rid of Dodge. They were going to put Jeep and use some of the components of Jeep within the Silverado business and then make Pontiac a rear-drive sports sedan company. Yeah, you can see that in that episode. He kind of gives you the whole detail on it.
Anyway, the company is now called Stellantis, which sounds like a drug for restless foot syndrome.
It sounds horrible, yeah.
Is your foot tapping? Well, try Stellantis.
I don't know what it is with the car world nowadays. It's either they name things after drugs or they name things after part numbers.
Yeah, it's weird.
BZ4X.
Anyway, it's a partnership between what used to be Mercedes, Chrysler, which was FCA, which is now Peugeot, Stellantis. It was Fiat, right? So
yeah.
It encompasses a lot of brands, but the ones that, of course, are the most valuable are. There used to be three very valuable brands. They spun off Ferrari, so that's its own thing now, which is smart, right? That came along with Fiat, so they got rid of Ferrari.
I don't know if that's so smart for Ferrari, because really how much investment do they need to keep Ferrari going, and that's my concern about Ferrari.
Well, I just think if they felt like it was the jewel in the crown and they didn't want, they were always looking for a suitor and they didn't want to sell the brand with Ferrari attached to it.
It goes back to what we were talking about in the other episode about Wall Street. That was more about taking out, doing a lift out, and basically making fees and making money rather than the health of the two companies.
Smart that, because let's face it, all those Wall Street traders, I think, would have loved to invest in Ferrari, right?
Absolutely.
It's a very sexy brand.
It was an insider deal. It was not about the car companies or the health of the two car companies going forward.
Yeah. So, the other two brands that were very valuable, obviously, were Jeep.
And absolutely.
I disagree, Motorman. I think, actually, I know the Jeep guys pretty well. I think they remain pretty true to the company, I guess, DNA. You know, the Wrangler is, and that's what it is. The Wrangler, you know, has that company DNA. Mm-hmm. And that vehicle has remained true to what it should be. It hasn't been changed, or, you know, there's so many ways you could have broken that. The easiest way was getting rid of the solid axles, mm-hmm. which they kept, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there was a lot of pressure to lose mm-hmm. the solid axles mm-hmm. and go to independent suspension.
My comment was more about the overall company.
Right.
There was no value for the assets around it, and Jeep was really the only value.
And Ram.
Well, that was later in the party. Like, Ram really had no value. It was an also-ran for a very long time, and then Ralph had the foresight to say, you know what? It's about the interior.
Now you're
design.
Talking about Ralph Giles.
Ralph Giles, great guy, talented
director of
designer.
Design.
Yep, for the whole company.
Yeah.
This guy has had a great career, and a man can chew. He can drive. He had the foresight, along with Chris Benjamin, who runs interiors for Chrysler. They said, you know what? We already don't do the off-road. We already do the unique beds and all that crap. It was about the interior, and as such, they completely leapfrogged GM, and now they're number two.
Yeah, it's an incredible turnaround. It's a very valuable brand now because obviously they also rode the wave of the off-road and truck craze that has swept this country.
Yeah,
and you know, we can talk about that, but my contention is that, you know, a long time ago, American manufacturers owned luxury, but we lost that to the Europeans. And the real, true, only American vehicle that is truly American is the pickup truck.
I always like to say that if you were to go back in time, and if there wasn't an oil embargo in 73, and the U.S. car manufacturers just sailed along smooth sailing, that's the pickup truck business today.
Yeah.
That's what the car business would look like today. But as it relates to the rest of the company, all of the other assets, I think they're killing it with Ram, killing it with Jeep. My comment earlier was all about the overall company, how they have so many... basically, land of misfit toys is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, let's face it. Fiat never took off. Alfa Romeo really didn't take off.
And frankly, Fiat wasn't doing really that well in Europe. It was a lot of incentives. It was basically a company there to employ Europeans. And I would argue that the reason why that shotgun wedding happened was because the Agnellis knew they had a pig that didn't have any future. They think about it. They didn't really have an EV future. They didn't have a future really in any market except for the U.S. because of the Chrysler part. And Europe is a calcified industry that, if anything, is being locked out. Car manufacturers are being locked out of it. So they said, we got to find somebody that's going to take this thing off our hands. And they found Tavares to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because it's like there's that old Star Trek episode where Spock says, you know, be careful of what you wish for is not as good as, you know, wanting is much better than having, right?
I agree.
And with both Alfa Romeo and Fiat, wanting, I think, was certainly better than having.
Because I agree.
You know, Fiat brought over the 500, which was, you know, old when it came here.
Yes, very old. It was 2007 when that thing came out in Europe.
Yeah, and considering it's a retro vehicle, it makes it even that much older.
Yeah.
And then the $500 was just, you know, just...
One of the ugliest cars on the planet.
And one of the worst that they could have brought in. There was just no... And then, of course, you had the Fiata, which was just basically... It was a good car, but why not just get the Miata? Why get the 124 when you can go get the original?
I mentioned in our last talk about different brands, I referenced Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in some of the stuff he's done. I've read the book, The Intelligent Investor by Ben Graham. Great book for people, I suggest it for anybody. But one of the things that makes a guy like that successful is know how to say no. And this group doesn't know how to say no. They are focused on Jeep, they're focused on Ram, but they don't really have any breakouts anywhere else. Everything else is just, well, we're kind of in this market, or you know what, the tooling is paid for in Brampton, so we'll continue to make the Charger for the 15th year.
There is a good side of that, and that is they don't know how to say no to horsepower, and I think the Dodge aficionados...
It's the only thing keeping Dodge alive.
Would love the fact that, you know, you've got 800 horsepower monster.
Yeah.
Muscle cars out there, you know, where do you take that? I think, you know, I've talked to Rolf, you've talked to Rolf, they have to make an electric muscle car. You know it's coming.
They will, and that's, okay, so now we get into, like, I don't want to be a wonderful one here, I want to give them some suggestions, and one of the biggest problems with those two groups coming together, neither one of them had a good EV future. The PSA was just starting to put something together, but they were nowhere near Nissan. They were nowhere near what Renault and Nissan were doing together, or Mercedes or Volkswagen Group was doing. So they got to figure it out on their own.
Chrysler has a hybrid minivan. Jeep has a 4xe right now, and those are the only two.
The only thing they got.
That's the only two. Oh, there's an e-torque thing, but that's basically just a mild hybrid. So really, they have no full-on electric car.
Yeah.
And they have one plug-in electric vehicle.
I would argue they need to learn the art of focus, probably divest a couple of brands. The one I wouldn't divest just yet is Alfa Romeo. I would double down on it.
And the brand is very valuable.
The brand is incredibly valuable. Either double down on it and do the right thing finally, like the focus you did on Ram and the focus you did on Jeep, or sell it to somebody else who can take care of it and make some money
out of it. Would you hold on to Maserati, or would you get rid of it? That's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
It's a good brand, but bad cars.
It's such a storied brand, but what they're doing is they're rebadging Jeep Grand Cherokees.
You can't do that.
And they're making just – you look at a Ghibli, it has no commercial value whatsoever. Hmm. And I don't think you can go back to the good old days of making competitors to Ferraris. I think if I were really pushed, if you said I had to make a decision, keep Alfa, get rid of Maserati.
Hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. Maserati is – has been struggling. I know that Sergio thought it was very valuable. I was never sure about that.
It can be. Yeah. Maybe you put it into another group, but who's going to buy it? Audi or Volkswagen's got everything they need. Toyota doesn't need some sort of ridiculous exotic car company. General Motors certainly doesn't.
Yeah,
tried that thing
Volkswagen
many years
has
ago.
Lamborghini. Why would you want Maserati?
You really don't need it. So maybe what you do is you finally make it a direct competitor to, like, I don't know, 7 Series or S-Class, but I think it's too little too late at this point.
Yeah. Anyway, I think they've got a bright future because Jeep is rocking it and Ram is rocking it, and those are like –
I also want to say something about this group. So I think I've been hard on this group, but I've also shown some serious respect for a lot of the bits that they're focusing on. But there's something about this group that no one else has. They have probably the best people designing, engineering, and building those cars.
Oh, no doubt.
The best.
They do.
And bar none. I don't care. This country, any country.
They do the least with the most.
They do.
The most with the least.
The most with the least.
Yeah,
and the thing that's amazing, they have gotten a string of terrible managers, terrible leadership.
And they've kept it together.
And they keep going. And that's a testament to guys like Ralph, Klaus Busse, Chris Benjamin, Mark Trosel. That's a lot of designers, I know. But there's some great engineers like, what's his name?
I agree.
Remember Dick Winkle?
He was the chief engineer of the Viper. They're like the underdog team that comes out of nowhere and, beats the big boy from having no resources.
They're like the fraternity house from Animal House.
And they
show up in the at the end in the parade.
Animal House, yeah.
That's Ralph.
Yeah.
See, Ralph, we love you.
I will call you Flounder or whatever it was. You are Pinto.
Yeah. Mark right. Allen's another great guy there.
Yeah.
Great people there.
Yeah. Let's keep going. We're going to quickly run out of time. JLR, boy, that's a story brand.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. There's so much there. History.
You want to hear a funny story.
Yeah.
I was angry. I was angry at Ford for selling them because I thought, that's a stupid idea. You should keep in the brand business. But talk about focus. Back then, Mullally was focused. He's like, dude, we can't survive with this much debt dragging us down. It is literally a boat anchor. And you know what? I was wrong. He was right. The problem is not the whole company. The problem is there's no future for Jaguar, and the future for Land Rover is bright. You just, again, need to be more focused. You don't need a Discovery and a Defender. Just a Defender is more than enough. Maybe a Velar, but not a Velar, and then something else.
Evoque,
whatever that whole thing is.
Yeah, so the thing, I think, from their product portfolio is problematic. So I think Jaguar has sold something like 1,500 cars in the U.S. this year, which is just, Ford sells that many F-150s in a week, or less probably. So Jaguar is really struggling. Obviously, Land Rover rode the crossover wave. So over the last 10 years, crossovers and SUVs have gone red hot, and that's what they build. I think the problem there is the design by Jerry McGovern. He makes everything look like, I call it urban chic, but the brand's DNA is basically, country chic, I guess, right? It started out
as... Would you call the new Defender urban chic?
The new Defender, out of all the designs that McGovern has done, is by far the best.
It's amazing.
But the rest of the designs, including the new Range Rover, are so minimalist and so like London cool that I think they've lost their way. I think at some point they need to be more square-jawed and need to reflect the fact that they came from an off-road background. And it's weird. I think it has a lot to do with geography. So I think if you're in London or... in the UK, where let's face it, there isn't a lot of off-roading, right? Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense. But when you get out to the rest of the world, where like their customers are Middle East, right? Here in America, we do have a lot of off-roading, and those you can't go off-roading on 22s or 23s, as the case may be with the new Range Rover, right? So at some point, they've lost their focus on the country part, right? They've gone too much city. There's that Green Acres, right? It's like that. Mm-hmm. They've gone too city and not enough country. I know the heritage. The heritage is always like we have the internals for off-roading, but if the thing looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and at some point swims like a duck, it's a duck.
But right? Do people really want hardcore off-roading vehicles?
No, they want them. They don't need them. It's like the G-Wagon, right? Nobody takes a G-Wagon off-road, but it's the reputation, right? If apocalypse would happen, right? You want that G-Wagon to bug out, right? That happened in the back of your head.
You want a 74-year-old Cessna so you can get the hell out of here. Okay. That's what you want, and burn 5 gallons an hour.
But if you're in Hollywood, you're probably thinking, I want that G-Wagon to get to my place in wherever Hollywood people have.
But people don't, very wealthy people that want a fashion accessory buy a G-Wagon. Like, I'm here driving that TRD Pro 4Runner now. And I thought I'd see 4Runners everywhere here in Denver. I see it more than I see in L.A., but frankly, I see more Sportages. I see more Santa Fes here.
Well, sure. I mean, it's
I think the reality is people want the crossover thing.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think they've gone too city and not enough.
Yeah.
The heritage of that was basically they took a Jeep. At that point, it was a CJ, right? Before CJ. And they copied it and made it into a tractor. The first Land Rovers were tractors.
Yes, they were.
Right? And now they've gone so far away from that, I would say too far away from it.
Do you think that they should have been a G-Wagon competitor with a Defender? Continued with that?
I was wrong about the Defender. I didn't think it was square-jawed enough, and the thing is sold out now. People love it. Ours was obviously problematic.
Do you still have yours?
No, we ended up selling it. Yeah, we keep them for like... at most a year, more like 6 to 8 months. Because
I haven't been following. Did you make money on that thing?
Did we make money on it? Yeah, I think we did make money on that guy.
Good.
Usually what we do is we trade it into the next vehicle. So basically what we did was we took the money we had in the Defender and put it in the Bronco. So we kind of move on. And we get like 10 to 12
That's
videos.
That's a cooler Defender.
Out of each vehicle, and then the money goes into the next one. So let's keep going. Mitsubishi.
Ooh. We go, is Nathan here? Because Nathan's going to start crying. Can we talk Nissan Mitsubishi?
Yeah, let's talk. Yeah, let's talk.
I think in the positive column, they're one of the few leaders legacy leaders in the EV world. They've been doing it very effectively and very credibly for 11 years at a mass market level, both in Europe with Renault and worldwide with Nissan. I think they are completely wasting money, resources, and time by keeping Mitsubishi alive. I don't think it should be there. I think everything should be under Nissan or Renault. I think they've hit bottom. I think they're at a point where they were lost for a long time, and they've had to tighten their belt, and they've been through, obviously, some major political turmoil with leadership. And folks like Alfonso, as well as some of the folks, the leadership here in the U.S., they've said, okay, we got to get back to what made us great, and that meant value and cars that were screwed together better.
Yeah.
So they started first with the Rogue. The thing actually is screwed together well. It looks good. The tactile feel on the inside is good. The only thing I would completely just say no to is the CVT. But even that, they've already addressed with the Pathfinder, and they've got, think of the Pathfinder as just Rogue larger, XL, and they've got a 9-speed automatic, which I have to say works incredibly well in that vehicle.
It's a good 9-speed.
It's good value, too. Yeah. It's funny, I talked to one of the guys at Nissan. I asked him, how's it selling? He goes, you know what, we don't measure these things in day supply, we measure these in minute supply.
Yeah, I think the same thing's happening with the new Frontier as well.
And the Frontier is good, and then I think they're really on fire. They've done the right thing with the Z. A lot of people crap on the new Z, saying it looks too much like a 240, or it's too small, or it's too much like a 370. The reality is, they kept a sports car alive in today's day and age, and they did it on their own.
And a manual without, sports, and a manual.
And a manual.
Yeah.
And they're not sharing development costs.
I know,
like Toyota
Toyota's the biggest car company in the world, and both the Supra and the BRZ, 86 are built with Subaru, which we'll get to in a second.
I'm going to steal a line from my brother Alfonso, Alfonso Albaiz, who runs design. He's the one that gave me this line I used in the last episode. The Z, here's my prediction. The Z is literally going to have sex with a UCLA cheerleader on the doorstep of Toyota. You heard it here first.
It's a beautiful car. I've owned 3 Zs in my life. I'm a Z guy. I was really disappointed that they let the 370 and in some ways the 350 kind of just...
Go so long.
Yeah, go so long with her.
Yeah.
All the love went to the GTR.
What was your favorite Z?
The first one.
You're a 240 guy.
Yeah.
I'm a Z32 guy.
And the one that I own that I love the most was the Z300 ZX twin turbo.
Yeah, Z32.
Yeah,
that's the one.
With the all-wheel steer, the rear wheel.
Love
steering.
That.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually took that to Europe. I had it in Europe for a while.
Got
it.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Got up on the Autobahn. Yeah.
Got a U.S. car you took to Europe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brought it over, and then I traded it on an M3, which almost killed me. I heard that story before,
yeah.
Yeah, at that time, you could keep an M3 in Europe for up to a year, and they would title it and insure it. Anyway, you had to buy the BMW here, so yeah. I had to ship the Z back, and I was going to Bremerhaven, and just outside of Bremerhaven, the Autobahn turns to 3 lanes, and no one's out there, right? So I got up to like 170 or something, full on. I was watching like the gas gauge go down, and then I'm like, I think I've got snow tires on this. I'm like, yeah, I've got snow tires. I wonder what they're rated. I'm like, I don't think they're rated 170. What will happen if one of them blows at 170?
Yeah,
it was a great car. I miss it.
Yeah.
Everyday driver, you know those guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He just bought one.
Oh, I didn't know he bought one. I know he's a Lotus guy. He and I connected because he likes Elises.
Yeah, he just bought a 928. So one of the guys bought a 928. They did this video series where one bought a 928 and the other bought a Z. I was very jealous of that Z. It looked really cool.
I want me a 928. You know my story with my 928. I wanted to get one, and my neighbor bought it out from under me.
I know. You should have gotten it.
I should have, because now it's worth $20,000 more, like 3 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how many should have, could have, would have, but didn't?
We?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think you're absolutely right about Nissan. My biggest concern for them is the Ariya is taking way too long. It should have been out
last year.
I got
another concern about the Ariya.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you, like the Toyota's taking too long, but more importantly, it's too expensive.
It is.
$47,000 is $12,000 too expensive.
I just did a video on it from the LA Auto Show, first edition, $53,000.
That's stupid.
Yeah. Probably the nicest interior out of any.
That's Alfonso realizing we don't compete just on price. We have to make a better product, but not at $12,000 more.
No.
Because the minute you get to 53, you're competing with a Y, and everybody's going to go to a Tesla.
Yeah, and you're probably 12K over what an ID4 is, right? And the ID4 still gets 3 years of free charging plus their 10K in tax credits. That is a hard headwind to sell
into. I'm going to say something here that would not be popular, but I'm a huge Dave Ramsey guy. I teach a class at my church on this stuff. I firmly believe all the car manufacturers need to get off the crack of the tax credits, because at some point they're going to go away. And in reality, for most people, they don't get money back.
You know how they do it in Europe?
How do they do it in Europe?
It's cash on the hood.
If
you're going to do it, that's the way to do it. Because what happens is if you do it as a tax credit, you're basically subsidizing rich folk, right? You are.
I call it welfare for rich people.
Yeah, that's what it is.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't translate to a straight discount. And I think it's disingenuous advertising when people say, like, Nissan's going to say, oh, well, this car is 47, but guess what? After you get all the tax credits, it's 40. That's a lie. That's not correct for every tax situation. And I'm coming up with an episode in January where I cover this in detail.
Yeah, what should happen, I think in New Jersey they do it with the state credit, is they just take off the 7.5, right, or whatever it is.
A lot of the states do it as a rebate.
It's a point of sale.
Yeah, California has a rebate. Yeah. Hawaii is a rebate. But the federal is a tax credit. It all depends on your tax situation, and that's where the confusion comes in.
If you're going to do it, it should be point of sale.
And at the end of the day, at some point, this is going to go away. And that's why these car manufacturers, I think, need to get off the crack of it now and get ready for the tsunami that will hit.
You think Polestar actually spun off, Volvo spun off Polestar because they wanted to maintain those tax credits? That's one of the reasons. Otherwise, it's a hard decision to do, right? Did a luxury brand like Volvo need another luxury brand like Polestar?
So not really.
So, you know, the inside scoop is that they did it because they wanted to be able to maintain two sets of, you know, tax credits.
It's entirely possible. I think there's other...
So the way it works is, you know, you get, I don't know, 250,000 units, right? You get it goes away. So
I think there's other moving parts there behind the potential, I guess, buyback of Volvo from the Chinese. I think that's part of it as well. We'll see.
So anyway, Tesla's lost theirs. Nissan lost theirs, of course, because of Leaf, right? So they lost, you know.
It's a victim of your own success.
Yeah. But you're right. I agree.
I do think the Leaf, I don't know where it's going to go from here. After the Aria comes, are they going to make a Leaf that's actually more competitive because the current one isn't that competitive? But overall, I think the biggest feedback I give Nissan is they're killing it on all the new product. Let's phase out the CVT on absolutely everything and keep the same equation, the same idea that they did with the Z. Keep that focus on all the new products going forward.
Yeah, agreed. All right, how about Subaru? Now, Subaru is in...
Do I have to talk about Subaru? Is that because I'm in Colorado? Is a law we have to talk about Subaru?
No, we don't have to talk about Subaru. But Subaru is in deep trouble right now. Their sales last month were down 40%. I know that's because of the chip shortage, but that is, you know, a big, big percentage to lose.
It's a huge percentage.
One out of two of your sales.
OEMs haven't been hit that hard.
Like 20%, you know, for Toyota.
All kidding aside with Subaru, I'm not a huge Subaru fan. I think, and actually one fun fact before we get into it. In 2009, what two car companies, only two car companies in 2009 sold more cars than
Subaru is one of them.
And Morgan.
Oh, Morgan, wow.
That was it.
Wow.
So Subaru had a good thing going. Yeah. But if I'm being completely frank, it's based on A, lower volume, and B, lower price points. Now Subaru has ballooned into these price points of $40,000 for an Outback. I think people are like, wait a minute. I like the quirky thing at $30,000, maybe $35,000, but at $40,000, I can buy me a BMW for that. I can buy me an all-wheel drive Mercedes for that. And I think that's where some of the defection is coming from. And then getting into kind of a more grand strategic point of view, this is perhaps a discussion for another day, but putting aside everything we just talked about, at some point, the volume of all these car manufacturers is going to be decimated because of all the fleet business that's going to be going. Whether it's you're sharing a car, whether your people move over to Ubers, whether people move into autonomous vehicles. And at some point, not tomorrow, we're talking like 25 years in the future, a company like Subaru doesn't survive. And the way I see it, a company like Subaru and Mazda come together under the auspices of like a Toyota.
Yeah, or a Toyota.
It's already happened.
Yeah. So they had this, I think there's a really great business strategy in the automotive world, and that is you build a quirky little vehicle, and it could be Subaru, or it could be Saab, or it could be Volvo, right?
Yeah.
And it builds this like tremendously loyal consumer base of owners, mm-hmm. Who then evangelize it, and then you make the vehicle less quirky, right? So you do things like you get rid of the spare tire that sits above the engine, right? Yeah. You make it more mainstream, and you make it more acceptable, and then that's a really great way to break into the general kind of zeitgeist and become a very successful brand. And that's what Subaru did. But like with Volvo, and in some ways like with Saab, how far can you take that?
But
before you run into like Toyota head on,
exactly.
Right, that's where it starts.
That's where we get back to what we said in the first episode.
How many hundreds of thousands of units do you get to? 500,000?
That's where we get back to the first episode. It's a race to the bottom. You can't compete on price. You can't beat a Toyota in that instance because Toyota has $50 billion. You have maybe half a billion dollars. And you don't want to really be in that business. You want to be in the business of like a Porsche, where they make a couple thousand less every year than they can sell. And as a result, they have a continually growing business at a slower level.
Right.
But it's a healthier business. Here's a number, actually, I wanted to share with you in the last episode.
Yeah, Porsche's next, by the way.
Oh, I'll save it for that then. How about that?
The last thing I was going to say about Subaru is, and it also happened with Audi, at one point, obviously, Subaru's thing that made them unique, distinguishing feature was that they were all all-wheel drive. Same thing with Audi. But
they don't have that anymore.
But everything's all-wheel drive.
It's like
now.
Volvo used to stock and trade with safety.
And everything's
safe. But then everybody went to the safety cages.
So you've kind of lost
my advice to Subaru is, in the short term, go back to what you were good at, which is making these quirky station wagons. Don't make them too expensive, because now you are right in the firing line of Mercedes, of Volvo, all these guys. I think they need to slow down. And also, when you partner with Toyota, don't make the cars look exactly the same.
So, you know, we purchased an Outback, and it was a base.
Yeah.
Not Outback, sorry. We purchased a Crosstrek. It was a base Crosstrek.
I'm sorry.
And we got it for $23,500, which was a really good price.
Yeah.
But you can get that same vehicle, basically the same vehicle, if you go for the bigger engine with all the bells and whistles for $36,000. $36,000 is a lot for an Outback. I mean, for a Crosstrek.
That's
it's a lot
stupid.
For an Outback, too, but it's a
That's
lot
a
for a Crosstrek. That's
a stupid amount of money.
Yeah, for the Crosstrek Sport.
That gets into another discussion of, you know, can people afford cars that are 36
Crosstrek Sport with all is $36,000.
No, not worth it.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Think about this. $36,000 can buy you a moderately equipped Telluride.
Yeah. I know.
It's difference.
It's getting up there. All right, let's move on to the next brand, which is one of our favorites, and that's Porsche. Porsche seems to be, once again, one of those brands that's just hitting the right note on everything.
So I can sum this up in one factoid. In 2021, Porsche has, probably 2-week-old information, 27,000 wholesale orders, meaning people who walk in and said, I want to buy the car. Not dealers just saying, I want to have stock.
Right.
Just people who actually put their name on a car.
Real people.
27,000. How many do you think they're able to deliver this year?
25?
10,000.
Wow. Yeah, chip shortage.
They're killing it. Yeah. So it's a combination of chip shortage, but so much demand for the product. Like even my guy, you know, Bo Galpin.
Yeah.
My guy was
telling. I don't know him, but I've heard of him.
Yeah. They have a Porsche store, and he's telling me that all the Porsche stores in LA are getting $50,000 over sticker for base 911s.
I believe it. Yeah, you can't get a base. You can't
it's
get
just
a 911.
Obscene.
You can't get a Boxster. You can't get a Cayenne. You can get a Cayenne. You can't.
They have some dealers have 4 cars to sell.
Yeah.
Granted, a good problem to have, but not sustainable. You got to get to a point. I used to work for Apple, and for 5 years, one of the problems we had was we'd come out with this great new product, but we could never get the supply out there, and people got pissed off and went somewhere else. So you got to kind of rein that in. Don't get it to the point where you flood the market, but get that happy medium. And I think this is advice to all car manufacturers. Maybe the seasonally adjusted annual run rate, currently it's, or normally before, in the before times, it was 17 million in 2019. Maybe it shouldn't be 17 million. Maybe we have a healthier, everybody has a healthier business. We bring it down to 12 million. A little bit more gross for everybody. They make a little bit more money per product, but let's not try to run this boom bust cycle, which screws economies and screws cities and employment.
Yeah, I think you just described like the problem that Ford is having with the Bronco. At some point, the sales of the Wrangler are being driven by the Bronco, right? Because people go try to buy a Bronco, they can't.
Yeah.
And I'll wait. How long do you wait before you just say screw it? I'm going to go to the Jeep dealer and pick myself up a Wrangler.
Yeah. And again, this is an unusual position we're in right now. We'll get past this. But I think the lesson people should take from this is maybe we right-size our businesses. Maybe we don't rely on incentives, or we don't rely on the concept of getting too many factories and having too much capacity. Let's right-size the capacity as well.
So let's say you want a 911, but they're unobtainium. What do you buy instead? A Supra?
Me? I don't buy anything. I wait until I get the car I want.
Well, I think that's the other thing. Most Porsche people will say that. But let's say you're not. What do you buy? Either if you're wealthy enough, you pay over sticker. Do you buy a used Porsche? I guess you can get a used one.
I think for me, I would probably get to a classic car.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I would do like an early C3, something like that.
Yeah, because you can't really get a Corvette either. Those are also...
Because I'm not... Oh, my God. I think the Z06 is going to be even worse.
Yeah, they're also sold out.
Yeah. I think there's an opportunity, like, people can go into classic cars, because the reason why I say that is the guy buying a 911 probably not dealing it. Or if he does, he's got another car that he could alternate so he doesn't put as much many miles on it. The only people I know that daily 911s live in L.A.
Yeah, I agree. It's a
And you could get away with dailying a classic car in L.A.
Yeah.
Not a Trabant.
Because the weather's beautiful.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. All right. Well, we promised the electric brands, so let's get into the electric brands.
Let's do it.
Because I've got a lot to say, actually, about a couple of these. But let's start with the big boy on the block, and that's Tesla. So we've owned a Model 3, a Model X, and a Model Y. And I got to say, Motoman, I am kind of done with Tesla.
Why are you done with Tesla?
Because look, I was thinking about this, okay? So I went to the Detroit Auto Show like 10 years ago, and that's when they first unveiled the Model S. And that car has, okay, they put a yoke in it, and they kind of changed, did a mild refresh on it, but it's been the same car now for 10 years. So I have a hard time getting excited by a 10-year-old car.
Okay.
Even if it's a plaid. I get that, but the design and the look of it is the same. Mm-hmm. Now, 2 years later, they unveiled the Model X. So I've been looking at that now for like 8 years.
Yeah.
Done with that, right? Same design. Cool, but same design. A Model 3 is what now, 4 years old? And then Model Y is
five.
Like two.
Model 3 is 5 years
old. 5 years old. Yeah. The Model Y is like 3 years or 2 years old. And to make things even worse, you can get it in what, six colors, two wheels, and two interior trims.
Yeah.
Here in Boulder, you can literally, and it happened to me, you can literally park your Model 3 at the grocery store, walk out, and there'll be three other white Model 3s parked next to it, and you'll have to like use your, you know, to figure out which one's
yours.
We
have the same problem in LA.
Yeah, it's just the design, you know, most manufacturers of cars refresh the car after 4 years, redo the car after 4 years, refresh it after two. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of bored of the brand. They need the lifeblood of any car company is new
product.
Let
me ask something a little inside baseball,
yeah.
Considering where we're sitting right now. Did you have a problem with range up here whenever you tried to take it to the mountains?
No, I never had range issues. Range is great.
Even up in the mountains at cold weathers?
Yeah, even in cold weather. Never had. Tesla does the best job in terms of their... I think both electric battery tech and infotainment. It works. It's seamless for the most part. They're the most integrated in everything in terms of the buying process, the repair process, the charging process. The whole thing is just very well and smartly integrated. It all, for the most part, works. It's like Apple, right? It all just works.
One closed ecosystem.
It's a closed ecosystem, and you pay a premium for that, but it's worth it. But I'm just bored of the cars.
Okay, so I'm going to give you my feedback.
Right, there's no like special models. There's no... Right?
No.
Except, I mean, there's a plaid, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a performance and a non-performance, but there's no like special edition, anniversary edition.
Yeah.
The one that's like, you know, green versus, you know, just
but
make
let's be honest, the kind of people that buy those things, frankly, not creative folks. They're just not creative car folks. They're not excited about it. They're buying an appliance. They're buying an iPad.
There's a lot of car guys and gals who love Tesla. I disagree. I've met a lot of Tesla owners. I think they love the performance. I mean, they're the quickest cars out there, right? The plaid basically is taking...
That's not the majority of the folks that are buying Teslas.
It's like, you know what it is? It's like left brain versus right brain, right? So, or like your head versus your heart. They're both, you can be fanatically into them. It's just you're doing it from a different point of view, right? You could be into it from like, I love the design of the thing because it's like an Alfa Romeo, it's just, you know, it's just like, or like a motorcycle. A motorcycle to me is like rolling art, right? Or you could be in it from that kind of mathematical point of view where you love the efficiency and the numbers and the purity of that. Mm. So it's just a different form of car fandom, I guess. But to me, like I said, after ordering three of them, I just wanted something else. And I guess the reason I figured that out was we had a Model Y performance for a year, never took it for a joyride. Just never even occurred to me. And then we bought that little Mini SE, which, you know, has 114 miles of range, drove it in one day from Albuquerque, which is a long way in a car that only gets 114 miles. And then that night, I took it out for a joyride.
That one of the most fun driving minis I've ever driven, the Mini SE.
Yeah, it's a really fun
fantastic car.
Anyway, so what's your take?
There's a couple of moving parts here. And this somewhat is the foundation is in where I came from in tech. I am one of the few car folks that actually have a significant amount of respect for Tesla as well as what Elon has built. Huge, mad respect for that. That said, as a design freak and a guy who really gets off on the tactile feel and build quality, that's probably the biggest pitfall. The vehicles themselves, they've improved a bit over the years, but it's still there's a lot to be desired, left to be desired from, say, the Porsche or the Mercedes of the world. And I think they need to fix that at some point. I think overall the business itself is not sustainable. They don't make money on the cars. This goes back to what we were talking about before.
Yeah, I think they're finally making money, but for a long time they did money on selling their basically
EV credits.
If you
look at the numbers, you dig into their numbers, they are not, it's like we were talking about before with the whole Wall Street thing, what happened with Rivian. The numbers are not relevant to the underlying business. The concern is, you make it up in volume, but you're not making money on each car. And what's happening is the business itself is changing and you're getting more competitors. And I will agree, he has got that Steve Jobs aura about him. But at some point, people are going to say, you know what? Just like you, I'm sick of a Tesla. I'll try the Mini, or I'll try the Porsche, I'll try the Mercedes, because you'll have an alternative.
Audi is the most successful non-electric car brand, right? Because they've got them. And I think it's people coming out of Teslas going.
Well, isn't Ford incredibly successful with the Mach-E? Like, their sales numbers are the closest to the Model Y every month.
Yeah, I think so. But I think Model S buyers aren't going to I don't think Model S buyers are going to go into a Mach-E, but they will go into like an e-tron.
But think about what we were saying here. You are sick of Tesla, not because it's a bad car.
Sick, I'm just bored.
You're just bored of it.
I'm bored of it.
And I think there's a certain percentage of these folks that will get bored of it, and there'll be an alternative.
Yeah,
now, before I forget, there's one other thing I got to say here, and I have to say it. You know where I'm going with this. I understand everybody wants an iPad on their dashboard. It's totally unsafe. Tesla is the worst offender. Tesla has had the most incidences of people not paying attention, and there is no such thing currently as a self-driving car, no matter what they sell you in terms of social credits, which pisses me off. And yes, I say this because I am a survivor of being hit by a Tesla, and the woman wasn't paying attention.
The regulators are asleep at the wheel, and you paid the price.
Completely.
I agree. You paid the price because they sell something that does not exist.
These car manufacturers need to police themselves, not wait for the government to do it. And then while I'm at it, I am going to bitch and moan about something that's somewhat political about this. This whole self-driving car thing, people think those are self-driving cars. They do have this autonomous mode they sell. You pay 10 grand or something like that for
it.
But you don't get it. What you get is you buy into social credit scores, which piss me off. And too many of the Tesla buyers are so excited about, oh my God, I'm going to get a good driving record so Elon blesses me with the auto driving feature. You should be pissed off that he took your 10 grand and made you jump through a hoop to get it.
Well, so what you're talking about is they had a beta version of full self-driving. In order to be able to get that beta version, the car would actually track your driving habits, and you had a score, like a perfect score.
Yes.
And there were people who were actually trying to game that by – there are like ways you could game it, of course.
Yes.
But anyway, the whole thing was just stupid, silly, right? There's 5 levels of autonomy. We're not even at level 2.
Exactly.
Level 5 would be the car can drive itself under any weather conditions without a human behind the wheel. We are so far from that. DARPA tried to go there. Even they couldn't understand. It's a very difficult thing to do. And yeah, it's right. Anyway, so
misrepresenting what the reality is.
So I wonder, because we're very privileged. So it kind of sounds condescending when I say I'm bored of Tesla, right? But I get to drive, and you do too, a lot of different vehicles. Most people don't get to do that. And I think most of the consumer world has yet not driven a Tesla, let alone owned a Tesla. But at some point, I think that is coming. And they are, the other thing that Tesla does, which is, I think, Elon gets away with a lot that most car companies couldn't get away with. I'll give you a prime example of that. We were supposed to be sitting in a moment when the Cybertruck was out. I was at the launch.
Yep.
It was supposed to be out
now. I remember the video.
Yeah. Now we're looking at, if we're lucky, not next year, but, 2024 probably when production starts. And at some point, how much patience do you have to have? And before the Cybertruck comes out, you're going to have Rivian out. You're going to have the Lightning out, which is a serious competitor, right? So if you keep putting off these launches and you do it not by a quarter or not by a month, but by years, at some point that's got to start to hurt your basic bottom line.
The Lightning, we forgot to talk about the Ford portion of this discussion. I think the Lightning is the secret weapon, and it's because they priced it at 40 grand at the entry level car.
Yeah.
I think they are going to beyond kill it.
Yeah, and so at what point does the Cybertruck, no matter what it looks like, become almost like a secondary player?
It's kind of like, I'll admit, I'm an Apple fanboy. I could save money and got a more powerful machine, probably pay half the price, but I buy the Apple because of the whole user experience, and I've been bought into that entire ecosystem for years. I think there's a certain percentage of people that will never change because they're bought into the Tesla, and those are the same people that are going to argue with us in the comments, tell us that you and I are idiots. But in reality, the fact that we're going to have more choices out there, I think that's going to erode Tesla's dominance.
Yeah, I also think with Apple, the analogy breaks down because basically there were two choices, right? There was the PC and then it was the Apple. Well, with cars, it's not like that. You do have Tesla, but you have, 12 other brands that at some point are going to be much more competitive than they are today.
But Tesla was the only one that actually solved the infrastructure problem.
Yes, and they're supposed to open that up. We'll see if it ever happens.
Yeah, he says it, but you know what? It's in his best interest to do it.
Right.
Because someone else, it's like playing Monopoly, someone else is going to pay for building his real estate.
Yeah, yeah. And at some point.
Guy's genius. I'll give it to him.
And at some point, you're going to start making money. Right now, you're losing money on the charging.
Yeah, but at some point, you are. Porsches and ID4s and Arias start plugging in, you better believe he's going
to
make some money.
Yeah, and so you're smart to open it up because you're going to start.
Absolutely.
Right. As opposed to small, you could quadruple or, tenfold increase your customer
Absolutely.
Base. Yeah. All right, let's keep going. How about Rivian?
Rivian's an interesting one. So that one, I don't have as much to add because I have yet to drive it. I am driving it soon. But from a design perspective, I think they have knocked it out of the park. I think they have gone...
Definitely a lifestyle adventure.
They've gone the Ridgeline Santa Cruz type. It's not like a hardcore off-roader.
Yep.
But what stands out to me is the incredible packaging of that vehicle. Some of the way they've done the design, but most importantly, and this is a little bit off the plantation here of actual cars, the reason why I think they'll be successful, they didn't take money from China. They took the right smart investment.
Yeah, and probably the most interesting thing that has recently happened with Rivian, besides the IPO, of course, which was a traditional IPO, which I give them much credit for, as opposed to doing a SPAC.
Huge credit for that, yeah.
Because that's a painful
SPAC's
process.
SPAC's the cheater. Fisker did the SPAC and Lucid did the SPAC.
SPACs are easy, and they show, you don't have to, you can just basically switch them on.
And frankly, it tells me you don't have your ducks in a row.
It does suggest that, because, the full IPO process, there's discovery.
You get a lot of scrutiny.
You have
to go through a lot of institutional investors, and trust me, I've been through that route. It's not easy.
It's painful, and Anyway, the one big news that recently was announced that they've kind of had a divorce with Ford. So Ford was one of the early investors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, either because of Ford's huge success with the Lightning, where Ford, kind of went to Rivian and said, we got this. Or because Rivian is seeing that Ford is going to be a competitor in that space.
Or do you think Amazon went to them and said, we want more of your capacity?
So Amazon, the interesting thing that people don't know about the Amazon agreement, it's in a very typical Bezos sort of way, it was very one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
So they did not commit to actually buying. They committed to buying up to this many, I think it was 100,000 of their vans, but there's no commitment to have to buy 100,000. Mm-hmm. So they basically locked them into production, but they didn't lock themselves into actually having to build, actually having to buy those vans.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of that is still up in the air, because if they build a good van and Amazon's happy with it, then Amazon, has Rivian production sewn in for 100,000, which is a lot from one
factory.
It's quite
a bit. The other thing I find interesting about Rivian, again, we'll go back to the whole cocktail party analogy. You and I go to cocktail parties. People think we're doctors. Hey, doc, what do you think of my elbow? I've never seen a car company ever, including Tesla, get the very early brand recognition that Rivian has. I get people come up to me who are not car people, definitely not truck people, and like, hey, what do you think about that Rivian? Or my friend's sister, she's got an order on a Rivian. People know it. I don't know what they did differently.
They hit the confluence of electric and trucks, right? So electric trucks are having their moment in the sun, and they're the poster child for that. Right before
Is that
Ford,
enough to get people? Like for example, I'm friends with a lot of law enforcement, and a buddy of mine who's in law enforcement, he drives an Explorer every day. He didn't know about Rivian.
One out of four in Texas, one out of four vehicles sold are trucks.
Well, that's Texas, the whole but
it's,
country.
It's, but it's going that way in the whole country. Your trucks are just having, you know, you're just it's just a thing right now. And I think they hit that confluence at the right time, and they got both the EV world and the truck world. And when they unveiled in L.A., what was it, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. they just nailed it out of the ballpark. And they also got the off-road bit to it, so they got it all right. Mm. Whether people understand that this is my whole thing that people, I think, don't quite appreciate. And having driven the Cybertruck, I can tell you it's a big, big old beast. And I think people don't appreciate just how big trucks are and how hard it is for somebody who lives in a city where most people live mm-hmm. to actually live with a truck. And L.A. is still kind of okay, but when you start to get into places like New York mm-hmm. or Chicago, it's very hard to own a
truck. But we're starting to see solutions like that. You and I just went to dinner in that Maverick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But but that's smaller than Rivian. So Rivian,
way smaller.
Yeah, Rivian is, you know.
It's about the size of the Honda?
It's a little bit bigger, so it's kind of in between. There's, you know, there used to be three truck categories, right? Mid-size, full-size, and heavy-duty. Mm-hmm. And the Rivian's kind of in between the mid-size and the full-size. So it mm-hmm. kind of splits the difference. But it's still a big beast. Even the Maverick is a pretty big vehicle.
Yeah.
It's a foot shorter than the Ranger.
Okay. So that's here's a big question. Here's a big question for you. You said that there were 50,000 pre-orders, of which Andre has one of them. How many of those do you think they actually turn into buyers?
Depends how quickly they can build them. If they build them in the next, a lot of this has to do with economic conditions because mm-hmm. those things will dry up like that if the economy goes south, you know mm-hmm. that. But if they can build them in the next 6 months to a year, then they'll sell most of them. If it takes them forever, which it seems to be taking them right now, they've mm-hmm. got, according to their IPO, they had built like 150 hand-built trucks.
Oh, one other piece of advice. They did the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. So they were a Michigan company.
Yeah.
And they decided to be the contrarian investor and open up a development office in Irvine, California.
Yeah, and they've got
the
more.
The least friendly state to business planet.
I think that's because RJ lives in California.
I think it was just to hire people, to be able to get people interested in moving there because they wanted to go to Irvine, not Michigan. But I think that's short-sighted.
All right, we have 6 minutes.
So 6 minutes, okay.
We have to finish this up. Yeah, Lucid. I think that they took I think they took Chinese money. I think Lucid was funded.
Lucid, no, they took Middle Eastern money. So
Lucid came out of Tesla, basically, the battery engineer.
Yes, and they basically followed Tesla lock, stock, and barrel. So all the Tesla engineers, they once again hired a designer from Mazda. This was Derek Jenkins, very talented designer. And they decided to do something different. Instead of going to a truck, they decided to make an ultra-luxury car, super expensive luxury car.
Built their own factory in
Built their own factory in Arizona. The question is, will it be successful? And again, I think it's a big function of where the economy is when the cars hit. I think the execution, they did a good job. And also, I'll give them the same star for the proper funding. They didn't take money from China. They didn't take money from China. They took money from sovereign wealth funds. And I think that turned into a smarter solution path for them.
Except, I think they're going to be selling into a pretty strong headwind because right now, no one is buying sedans, mm-hmm. and you know, $160,000 sedan, that's a big ask. Even in this time, that's a big ask.
It's a big ask, I agree.
Even if it's got 500 miles of range, which it does, it's a lot of money. And at $160,000, if your direct competitor is the Model S Plaid, which is $130,000, which is quicker, which is cheaper, which has its own charging network, it's a big ask.
I think it's biggest blue sky is people like you that are sick of the Tesla. They want something different.
I agree, yeah.
I don't think you're going to get the S580 driver to switch. I think it's a guy who's coming from a Tesla. The question is, how many are they going to sell? And I would ask, what is the capacity of the factory? Do you know that?
I don't know what the capacity is.
So we're going to have to find out and come back to the audience on that.
Yeah.
And then also, one more thing I'll say here. One of their strategic advantages is Derek Jenkins because he's an unusually talented designer, not just on form but also packaging.
Yeah, I think, once again, you know, here's a dirty secret of the car industry. Even though people know car companies like Ferrari and Porsche, right, or Aston Martin or Lamborghini, in terms of like actual like size and they're just tiny little companies.
Yeah. Right?
You don't make money selling very expensive luxury cars.
No,
you make money selling Model Ts.
Yeah.
Right? Ford or GM or...
One of my mentors in college left me with this advice, which I've never forgotten. If you sell to the rich, you will eat with the poor. If you sell to the poor, you will eat with the rich.
Yeah, very good. All right, you got 3 minutes. You got to go.
Okay, how about canoe?
I don't care about canoe. Let's talk about, I'm going to say it the proper way. I think it's Rimac.
Rimac. Yeah, you would know better than
I
me.
I don't think it's Rimac. I think it's Rimac.
It's not Rimac. I got yelled at by many people about that.
I think
that.
It's Rimac.
Yes, in Schuldigung. It was Rimac.
As a Slavic
It's Rimac?
Rimac, I think.
Rimac.
Rimac or Rimac or something like that.
First of all, the founder.
I shouldn't say no one cares about canoe. It's own little thing. But this is more.
Just real quick on canoe.
Yeah.
Amazing talent they have attracted. They've attracted people from Mercedes AMG, from General Motors, and I think they're one to watch. Let's move on.
I hope they actually build it. Yeah. They said they'll build it next year. We'll see.
They too did the thing with California as well. Anyway, so
but now they're building
Rimac. Mate is incredible. This kid is literally the dancing bear. I am blown away by his history. I did an episode about the history of the company and what this deal is, but ultimately, what's happened here is this man has been given control over the Bugatti brand. It's under a JV between Porsche and Rimac.
Yeah.
But what people don't know is this guy doesn't just make his hypercar as well as now Bugatti hypercars, which will most likely go electric. He is a tier one supplier to the EV world. And it's already a profitable company because of the tier one auto supply business. That's how he funded making the hypercars. So this guy is the modern day Enzo Ferrari.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think that was a huge win-win because I think at the end of the day, basically Porsche, which is Volkswagen Group, now owns, but he's running the Bugatti and the other brand. So they got the best talent. And yet they managed to somehow own it at the same time.
I think the real win, they don't own Rimac, or whatever it is. They don't own it.
Didn't they split the company somehow?
So Volkswagen Group owns 40% of the overall Rimac company. But I think the real win for Volkswagen Group, they're going to take the brain trust of Rimac, or Rimac.
Let's just say Rimac, it's easier.
Entschuldigung, of Mate's brain trust, and I think he is going to dictate EV strategy for the entire Volkswagen Group. So that means not just Bugatti, I think overall he's going to dictate or talk into the EV strategy of Porsche, Volkswagen, Audi, and let's say Lamborghini at some point. Who knows, maybe even Ducati.
Yeah, probably.
This was a coup.
Well, there you have it, guys. Our take on how we would fix now the electric brands.
How much do we get paid for this?
Nothing.
Like, these guys should be giving us consulting fees.
We're getting paid nothing. We're making no money on this.
This, you know what? Then we're going to have to do a spec.
But we're having fun.
We are having fun.
You got a good lunch out of it. I got a good conversation with a buddy. I mean,
it was great to see. I miss you. I don't see you as much.
Sometimes that's worth a lot more than
it is
than money.
And we got to drive a Porsche to lunch.
Oh, we did. And don't tell me we'll do the video.
Oh, I am going to torment him mercilessly about every bad decision he made with this car.
And there are a lot of them. All right, guys. Well, thank you again for joining us. Remember, if you want to get all the TFL content, head on over to tfl-studios.com. If you want more from Motoman, head on over to Motoman TV on all the social medias, including, of course, YouTube. See you guys next time. Ciao.
See you guys.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.